This is episode 38 of the Mentoring Developers podcast. Welcome. Visit us online at mentoringdevelopers.com/episode38. Head on over there to get a transcript of this interview and a lot more.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. I've been really looking forward to talking to somebody who runs a code academy and interview him and talk about some of the struggles that people who go to code academies face and what do they do for their self-esteem and their career. So today I'm bringing to you the chief technology officer of a code academy called Sabio. This is in LA. So this week's guest is Gregorio Rojas. Gregorio has been in the software development business for a number of years. He was CTO and co-founder of an online real estate listing site, My Social Listings. He was a director of development at SFW, which is a SaaS enterprise software startup. And most recently, he was a lead developer of the monetization team at MySpace. So a pretty impressive resume. And I think that you will really enjoy listening to this interview, especially if you are a new developer, if you are Latino especially, if you are stuck in a job that you really don't like and you want to get into software development. He will inspire you to pursue this field and he'll show you exactly how you can succeed. So here it is, my interview with Gregorio Rojas. Before we start the show, I have a favor to ask you. You know, this show is all about new and aspiring software developers and their mentors. And I want to interview and I want to bring out stories from all of you. Whether you are a junior developer, you want to be a developer, maybe you work with developers, hire developers, maybe you mentor them. All of these stories put together build for us a complete picture. And then we can learn from our experiences and find out how we can be more successful, more inclusive, how we can have diversity, how we can encourage people to get better and encourage people to come to this field. If you want me to interview you or if you want to be on a discussion panel, go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join. Hi, everyone. Today, I have a very special guest, Gregorio Rojas, and he is an instructor and a founder at a code camp. So someone that we haven't had before, we haven't had a code camp founder or instructor on this show before. So I'm really excited to have him here. How are you, Gregorio?
I am doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic and so excited to have you on. And I want you to tell us your story and walk us your path to becoming a software developer from being a complete computer illiterate, as you describe yourself, and going from your first job within a year and a half, becoming a senior developer, making a healthy salary, and there are some bumps and some hurdles that you encountered. So I want you to tell us how it was when you got your first job. How did you feel? How was your feeling? I don't want you to go into any details, but just describe your emotional state through this process.
Well, before I get into that, first of all, thank you very much for having me on. I've been looking forward to it. So thank you very much. And so going into, you know, my first job, you know, I actually got a bachelor's of science at Boston University for sports medicine, and I was an athletic trainer. And so that was a very, you know, personal job where, you know, I was literally touching people, literally not just working with people, but touching people. And transitioning into a world where, you know, I actually just was typing, that was weird and that was strange, but I knew that there was a lot of opportunity in tech. You know, I happened to find myself surrounded by some people that were getting into tech. And it sounded like, you know, wow, that's something that I actually should be doing. And through a series of different events and talking to people and some instructors, I got the confidence to, you know what, let me go try this. So I found myself what I thought was going to be a software developer job, a junior job. And I was making, to give you some context, I think I was making like $27,000 for my first job, but it ended up being of a QA job. And not the exciting QA jobs, software developer, engineer and test jobs, or, you know, automation QA, like just very straightforward. Someone wrote some code over here and go log in and click, click, click and press some buttons and see if things work. That was not that exciting. And I knew that's not what I wanted to do. I knew that's not, you know, really, why I had dumped my career and 5 years of education. To come in and do QA at that level, right? And so that was frustrating, but I was able to continue doing my own study at home to try and make sure that I equip myself with, you know, employable skills. And so I did that. I built what actually had the domain bostonapartments.com, and I built a little, you know, apartment listing application because apartments in Boston was huge. I will not mention the fact that I let that domain name expire, and it's heartbreaking, but I did let that happen. But it allowed me to get into a company that was a dev shop, where all they did was just build product for other folks. And I got my way into a company where I was managing the IKEA North American and Canadian sites. And the code and the platform that powered those sites was essentially a large content management system, right? At that time, you know, content management systems, we didn't have WordPress. We didn't have anything like that. So it was very strange for me because I had no idea what a content management system was. And so, you know, that was my second job. And that was about 3 or 4 months into my career. And then if we flash forward, I went from working in Boston in that company, took a hop over to El Segundo in California, right before the dot-com bubble burst. And then when it did, I ended up having to leave that company and walked into a job, a fantastic job that a new colleague of mine set me up with in El Segundo, where we were doing online e-commerce. And that was a job that it was pretty much at the 18 month mark where, yeah, all of a sudden I was getting paid $82,000, which was more than the top level, you know, athletic trainers were getting paid at the time. So that was a really rewarding and really kind of shocking. You know, looking back at this, I was explaining this to someone the other day. I really was disoriented that first year and a half. Like, I just didn't understand. You know, I totally had the case of imposter syndrome where I was just, you know, head down in the code, just trying to make sure that I was earning. You know, I earned whatever it was that these folks were giving me. And I really considered it an opportunity. And I was like, I was waiting for someone to come in and be like, look, you're not cutting it. I was waiting. But the other thing I was waiting for, I was waiting for the real work to start. I was telling the fellows this yesterday. I was waiting for someone to come in and say, okay, now here comes the hard part, because I was expecting, okay, this is going to get to a point where it's going to be ridiculous. Like, this is going to be like, you know, the rocket science part of this, the science part of this, the computer science part of this job, it's going to kick in soon. And I got to be ready for it. I got to be ready for this thing that was going to really, you know, out me as someone who did not belong. But that never came. And so that never came. And I was just left wondering, even back then, why aren't there more people doing this? Because it isn't that hard. It's different, but it isn't that hard. But I never did anything about it. I just carried those feelings with me and, you know, went about, you know, doing my thing in tech and in entrepreneurship. And it wasn't until, you know, 3.5 years ago that my wife and I decided to start Sabio.
Fantastic story. You went from one success to another, and you were expecting really, really difficult times because you didn't have a computer science degree and you kind of didn't know what you were doing. You started QA. You started at $27,000 a year, and very quickly you got to over $80,000 and on. And so we're going to talk more about some of the details there later in the show. But first, I want to talk about your introduction to software development. Why did you choose to go into that? You said that you were interested in it, but you had a degree, you had a plan, you went to college for something else. What was the trigger for you to want to give all that up?
It was really necessity. As I say, it was a necessity. I needed to find, and I don't know, I mean, it's really embarrassing, but I was in my fifth year in athletic training. In athletic training, the way they bring you up, the way they educate you in athletic training is a fantastic way. It's hands-on. From your freshman year, you're in the clinic, you're in the training room, and you are working with athletes. So it's very hands-on, what we would call an apprenticeship type thing. And it was wonderful. It was fun. And it was so fun. And it was so awesome. Literally, I mean, it was awesome. I got to go and see some really great games. You know, I was a big fan of sports. I mean, I am a big fan of sports. I just don't have the time right now to spend as much time on sports as I would like. You know, typical, young man growing up in New England, you know, like, oh my God, like sports, especially football. So I was doing really well. I was having a lot of fun. But then, again, embarrassingly, I realized, again, now while I'm at Boston College, that this is not actually what I want to do for the rest of my life. The quality of life, the amount of time I have to spend away from a family, I wanted to have a family and I wanted to be able to provide for them. And I realized, man, this is not going to cut it. So I was actually kind of really bummed out towards the end of my career there in athletic training. But a couple of things happened, two big general things. One, a lot of my athletes kept talking to me about how they were graduating and going to make 70 grand right out of college, $70,000 right out of college. I was getting paid about $11,000. I don't know if they called it a salary or a stipend, but it was $11,000 a year I was getting paid, which was one of the best positions in the country at the time for someone right out of college in athletic training. And the career track for an athletic trainer, again, like for you to get into the $70,000 range, you'd have to end up working at really high level athletics like the NFL and the NBA.
It's interesting.
And those types of jobs, people don't leave. Those jobs, people die. When they die, yeah. So instead of waiting for that, I had my athletes talking to me about software. So I was like, oh, is that something that I should consider? And that alone wasn't enough. I was taking a master's program. And one of the classes, and this is geared towards my sports medicine career, but this one guy insisted that as part of one of our projects, when I say one guy, one of our professors, is do something. They gave us a choice of three different types of projects to do. And one of them had to do with HTML. So I said, you know what? These guys are talking to me about coding and I know HTML is about coding. So I struggled with what would be the ugliest HTML page that you've ever seen for 2 weeks and presented, at the end of my project, I presented this one HTML page and the highlight of the page was I put a little Tweety Bird GIF at the bottom of the page, but something that you had to scroll down into. So at the end of my presentation, I scrolled down into show the little Tweety Bird that was flapping. And now I had no idea how this thing was flapping because it wouldn't flap when I looked at it on the computer, you know, outside of the browser. And all of a sudden it would flap when it was in the browser. And everyone kind of gave me credit for making it flap. And I took it. I was like, yeah, that was awesome. It took me a really long time to do that. But I remember the feeling of when I scrolled down and those people were like, wow. And I remember, wow, that felt good. I felt good. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this. And that was it. Those two things combined then gave me the confidence to like, let me go and make that happen. And so literally like probably within a month, 2 months, I quit and I started bussing tables, parking cars. I mean, whatever it is that I needed to do so that I could take some night classes. And again, the night classes back then, there was no nighttime learning coding program. There was an adult school program for, I forget the name of the certificate program that I signed up for at Northeastern University, but it had like the most technical courses on it. And so that's why I picked it and that's why I jumped into it. But those courses alone were not enough, right? Because I had to do a whole lot of work behind that, on top of that, because it wasn't a CS program by any means. It was like, hey, learn about technology, because you didn't when you went through college, right? So that was like what I signed up for. And those courses, though, completely gave me what I needed to be able to get into my first job.
Okay, nice segue. Now we need to learn about how you got your first job. What did you have to do? Can you tell us step by step how you got your first job?
Well, you know, I did the typical, I did what I knew to do and to, you know, spend time on Monster and just, I interviewed like crazy. And I wasn't trying to be picky. I just needed to, I don't know what I used to call this, but today we would call that breaking in, right? I just needed to break in. And I was trying my best to really put something together tangible, right? That's when I had my little Boston Apartments application in the works. It wasn't complete, but I was trying to show up at interviews and have something tangible for these hiring managers to look at so that they knew that, yeah, this guy's obviously, I mean, I hope I communicated that I was motivated, but look, just don't take my word for it. Not knowing what the technical interviews were about, and looking back on it, they weren't that hard because they clearly saw me and I'm assuming they're like, yeah, this guy, let's not even bother testing this guy because he doesn't know anything. But I would walk in and I would tell people, look, just go to this site. And increasingly it got better, right? Go to this website. Increasingly, I started doing, you know, ASP, the classic ASP with VBScript. And over time, you know, that site got better, but it was enough for me. It was enough for them to give me an opportunity, to do QA. And even back then the technology industry saw they needed people. Even back then they needed people. I remember one of the guys that I knew in college. He was getting paid $50 an hour just to do HTML. And he was just a kid in college getting $50 an hour just to do HTML, just run of the mill HTML, nothing fancy, just HTML. And so there was that demand. And I leveraged that to be able to get that first job. The second job was a little harder because, yeah, now I was working and I had to schedule all that stuff around work. And that was new to me. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know what was appropriate. I didn't know what I could get away with, you know, and again, then it was, now I was looking for a little bit more because I was making 27 grand. I didn't want to get paid 27. I wanted to try and get a little bump on top of it, trying to be smart on that end, knowing that like, I got to try and get a bump here. And I did end up getting a bump to like 33, 32. So it was something in that neighborhood. But by the time I was interviewing for those positions, you know, I remember going into some offices and these people, I mean, essentially, you know, they laughed at me like, come on, you're kidding. But there were some people that were receptive, and there was a particular company called The Screen House in Boston at the time that, because their business was just to produce code and pump out product, they needed people who were willing to pump out product. And I showed up and look, I code all day and night. That's what I was doing already. So it just makes sense that I would code all day and night for you. And that's what we did. It was a typical startup shop where, you know, people were sleeping on the couch and we were having keggers on Friday. And, you know, who knew when people were coming in, but you knew what, when they got here, they were here all night. And we were just busy coding all day, all night.
Wow, that sounds grueling. And obviously you didn't have a family back then, so you were able to put in that time.
But, correct.
But you see, I'm trying to understand if in that environment, was everybody very young, male, kind of the same demographic?
For the most part, absolutely. Absolutely. There was the leadership. There were a couple of people on the leadership team, let's say, call them the project managers, that they were not young whippersnappers. They had experience in project management. Like, we needed that. With all the product that we were building and all the stuff that we were doing, we needed somebody to manage this situation. And we did have those people in those key places. When I got to the company, I was like employee number 17. And like 6 to 8 months later, whenever it was that I left, there was 70 people in that company. So there was a lot of growth and a lot of product. And so the people who managed that definitely had that experience. And I mean, you're right, it was grueling. But for me, that was my education. That was really where I learned. This is what it informed my, again, how I came up and how we started doing Savio. Is like on the job training. Let's get you to actually do the job of a software developer. And it was at that place that really those 6-7 months is where I learned, this is how you code, man. This is how you learn to code. This is how you get from where you don't know something to where you are really good at it, right? In that intense period of time. And as you get, yeah, absolutely lucky that I didn't have the babies at home. I didn't have any other responsibilities. It was just me trying to make sure that I could feed myself.
Right. So now you were in that great, unique position. I think it's good. If you're young, if you're 20 years old and you can punish yourself like this, go ahead and do it, because when you come out of it, you will have learned a lot of things and your experience will be really, really valuable and you'll have the confidence of getting things done. I'm all for it. It doesn't work for everybody, so I don't think that this is how everybody should work, but for some people, it works. Now, my question to you is this. I am imagining your company, they have a bunch of 20-year-olds, 25-year-old people who are just working all day, all night, and they're just pumping out code, and they are meeting deadlines and just getting products out, which is great. But now you don't have a senior professional, somebody who will hold your hand a little bit, will mentor you, guide you in the higher principles, maybe tell you a little bit about, you know, the bigger picture. I don't know. I just wonder if you ever felt the need for somebody who's 10 years your senior and is going to take you in and talk about architecture and good and bad code and design patterns and all that.
You know, when I was going through it, I can tell you that I felt like I needed more. I felt like, you know, a little bit like flailing like a fish out of water. Like, what am I doing? And, you know, it just happenstance that I was flailing in an industry where things are so good that, you know, almost being present led to success. But I can tell you now with perspective that the first 5 years of my career would have been significantly different had I had that person. Had I had that person or a group of people that could actually provide that mentorship, that would provide that mentorship, but I didn't. I didn't have it. Looking back on my time, I had some developers that I leaned on and that were really good about spending some time with me and really just encouraging, like, yeah, let's go build some stuff. You're good. Let's just go. But I also, you know, the other side of it is I didn't know how to ask for it. And someone recently asked me about, like, you know, some of the things that if I could go back and change that, and if I could tell you that one thing that would have been so different in my career, if I would have had someone, if I would have known how to ask for it, and if I would have had someone to ask for these questions, these career questions, where not just coding, but like, what do I do with my career? And or how do I deal with my managers? And how do I deal with my colleagues? How do I do that? Because I know how to do it like with my college buddies and I know how to do it in different settings, but how do I do that with professional? What's appropriate? What's not appropriate? What's the time? What's the strategy? Now, having, you know, 16 years in the industry experience, I have a lot of those answers. Not to say that they're the correct answers, not to say that they're the only answers, but I have a lot of opinions about it, and a lot of what I do is to share those opinions with the people who come through our program, who are in our program.
Yeah, I think that a sort of mentorship, I don't know what the right word to describe it. It's not really mentorship that you need. You need somebody to look up to. You need role models. You need people who will sort of guide you, sort of your guide through this journey. It doesn't have to be all you all by yourself and just figure it out, because, you know, you're going to make mistakes and not everybody is going to come to the right place and they're going to struggle. So there's your organization and there are other organizations. This podcast, one of the purposes of this podcast is to encourage sharing of knowledge, is to encourage mentorship and to get people to, you know, just help each other a little bit. So that's all good. But I think I want to know from your perspective, when you started several years ago in this field, and now, you think has been a change in the industry towards more sharing, more collaboration, more mentorship? You think things are the way they were? Are they getting worse?
I don't think that they're, well, you know what, high school football coach of mine used to say this, and he used to say, you either get better or you get worse, but you don't stay the same. And the reason for that is that across time, you're supposed to get better. You know, across time and in a given task, you're so really supposed to be making progress. And if you don't, well, you technically, you're getting worse. And so using that as a point of reference, I can tell you that we're actually getting worse, because since I've gotten into this industry and I see, you know, software developers are interesting group of people. They're very sharing, right? Like GitHub, super popular. Look at my code. This is awesome. Look how awesome we are. And look at how awesome you could be. But then at the same time, like there's like a little fine print at the bottom of the if there was a bottom of the document that says, but don't try this at home, right? So there are the big gates that we talk about in software development, and as far as mentorship and being welcoming of actual other people and different people, again, when we talk about diversity, those walls are still very, very much erected. They're really high. And in spite of the fact that they're like, there was never, you know, these individual programs and these national organizations, they did not have the voice that they have today. But considering it's been 16 years, I mean, I got to tell you, it's horrible. Like, we really should be much further along than where we're at. So, you know, that said, you know, it's a great, great place to be. But again, just if I'm going to be honest, I have to tell you, yeah, we should be much better further along, but we just can't, because it's really hard to really get the actual software development industry and those professionals. I'm not talking about the general startup community, because in the general startup community, there's a variety of different people in there. One of those big players in that startup community and in the tech community is software developers. And software developers, I'm talking about those folks. Those folks have not made the progress that I think they should have, that we should have in the last 16 years.
That's an interesting perspective. And I see people talking about inclusivity and diversity. And I believe that we certainly can do better as an industry, unless, I mean, what I want to say is that the only way to do that is if you think about it, make a plan, and make a concerted effort to do something about this. If you want to have diversity in your team, if you want to make people more comfortable as they're coming into your team, if you want to make sure that your team can succeed. Each individual is different. They come from their own different backgrounds, but they can all contribute. And overall, a diverse team is a better team, if all else being equal, because they bring the diversity of perspective, and the product is going to be better. And sometimes we don't have the culture to have that, right? A lot of organizations, they don't want diversity. They actually want conformity, which works against them in the long run.
Correct. I agree with you 100%.
All right. So you have heard a lot of stories from people who started software development. They wanted to be software developers. And then they went through your program, perhaps, or they went through some other program. And then they found success. What is your feeling about the difficulties, some of the issues people face as they get into this field and they get their first jobs?
Well, you know, it's what a little bit of what I had right now. You know, the imposter syndrome, that is really the hardest thing is to get over. Because even though you come through training programs like ours, and even though you might really succeed, you really have to kind of get out there and be in the industry and spend a little time, like I did, like sitting at that desk and doing your job. And you have this little anxiety about, like, well, should I be here? Are they going to figure out that maybe I'm not as good as I, you know, maybe I was just able to fool them in the interview, right? Maybe I just had a great day and you just wait. And so there's that, right? And then that's the biggest thing. And then the other thing is, you know, am I a full-fledged member of this team? And because a full-fledged member of the team should have a voice and not necessarily decision-making powers, but you should be able to vocalize opinions about code, right? So again, that ties in again back to the imposter syndrome. Like, should I, or what are my opinions worth? And so being able to vocalize that and vocalize your opinions and feeling comfortable in your space, that's really big. The other thing about, you know, getting started into tech, that sometimes takes a little, some people are back, is that, you know, every day and every month there, the possibility of a brand new framework, a brand new something, and even maybe not a brand new widget or code or framework or platform that had come out, but it's new to you. And so the thought and the feeling of like, man, I got to go learn something else like that. Yeah, that's an everyday thing for software developers. And even though you do that in training, you know, at least really good programs will make you face that reality that, like, hey, it's a new day. And guess what? It's a new thing to learn. That's just an everyday thing for software developers, where in a lot of industries, if you think about it, a lot of industries, you know, once you learn your core set of skills, you just apply them mostly the same way, but in different scenarios. But it's the same core set of skills. And to realize that the core set of skills in software development is simply learning new platforms and new code and new libraries, making that connection sometimes takes a little bit of time, because then you end up feeling like, man, I just can't get a hold of this. I can't get, for some reason, I just can't wrap my arms around this and just really own this, because it's not the actual code and or a specific library that you're supposed to own. You're supposed to own the feelings of like, yeah, just throw something at me and I'll go learn it.
So how do you keep your skills up to date?
Well, my part of my responsibility is to make sure that we do, you know, cutting edge stuff. So I do coding, just as not as much as the people going through our program, but I spend a lot of time at night coding and making sure that what we are training in the program is most appropriate for what employers are looking for. And I, you know, I have to keep my saw sharp, as they say. But the interesting thing is, because how we do our training, you know, a lot of what we do in software development is debugging, and at least at my level, right? I'm going to do a lot of debugging right now and as a lead developer doing design and architecture, and someone else goes in and implements that, right? So that's actually what I do all day long, is I help people with their code. They have problems with their code, and I go in and investigate with them. I follow good development protocols. So one of the things that someone learning to code forgets is just the basic. There's some basic things you just need to do, regardless of what the bug is. Like, there's some boxes you need to check as you're trying to go in there and debug a particular program. There are things that you do. So every day when I'm in training, I am doing that all day long, as I would in the industry as a lead architect, lead developer, someone in that capacity.
Okay. So now people suffer from imposter syndromes. They need to keep their skills up to date. It is a constant pressure cooker situation in some companies, not everywhere. Sometimes it is nice and easy if you're getting a government job. Sometimes it can be like that, but then you don't get compensated to the point that you might be happy with. So there's this feeling that this profession is not only complex and complicated, but it's hard and it's stressful. So knowing all that, and with your perspective, how will you rate software development as a career for someone who's curious but a little intimidated?
I don't know if I could rate it high enough. Like, there is no words to describe how awesome this field is, really, in my opinion, because part of the question that you said, there's a key word in there, is, and that's perspective, right? You got to have perspective. When you ask this question, you really have to take this in perspective, because, you know, how good is it? How would I rate it? What we're talking about is a comparative statement. So I need to have the perspective of saying, look, this software field, this profession, as opposed to what? And if you're going to compare it to anything, in my opinion, you just cannot find something that is this awesome, because, you know, and this is one of the things that, again, it draws on what we do on a day-to-day basis and what drove us to do Savio, is that in my own personal experience, I would actually sit next to people who would literally complain about their job and how hard it was and how terrible it was. And that's just, I don't understand it, dude. Like, it's an open book test every day. Right. Every day. You don't have to know this. If you're a doctor, you don't have an open book test. Like, if you mess up and you're a doctor, you know, someone dies. You know, if you work for Elon Musk and you mess up, there's, like, you know, tens of millions of dollars of a product that blows up and the whole internet sees it. Right. I mean, there's all sorts of different examples that we could talk about where in software development, look, it's an open book test. You're sitting in, usually in an air conditioned place, and startups, they give you food. They'll do other services for you. There's parties, there's networking events. It's fantastic. Essentially, people are paying you to learn. And if you learn enough, you can go off and do your own thing at a very, very, very limited budget, right? Because what do you need? You need there's all the freemium models for all the cloud platforms, whether it's Azure or AWS or what have you. you can build a brand new company from scratch by going out and getting into a $40 a month lease for a laptop. Boom. And you can start your own company and do your own thing. You can even go to hackathons, which we do often, and two of our fellows went out and won big bucks to start their own company. Where can you do that? Where can you start up a company? If you're going to build rockets, we're talking about millions of dollars in factories and whatnot. If you're going to do that with cars, if you're going to be a carpenter, if you're going to be a doctor, if you're going to be, name the other industry where you can do this at such a low cost, at such a low barrier to entry, and that it is accessible, you know, from a logistic perspective, in many ways, it's accessible to a lot of people. The unfortunate truth is a lot of people don't know a lot of the stuff that I just said. They think it's this really high barrier and there's this high cost, and then there's huge, tremendous, horrific learning curve, and there's so many actual physical things blocking you, and that's not the case, right? So going back to you know, software development is awesome. It's fantastic. It's such a great field. And it's really, again, I say this often, but, you know, if I look at other people in my circle and other people that I know that are not in tech, one of the things that I've been able to really, I mean, it's a nice warm blanket that I go to bed with every night, knowing that, you know what, tomorrow I got a job. If I wanted to not do Sabio, I can go get a job, no problem. When I was working for someone else, I knew that, you know what, if I really don't like this place, I'm just going to tell them, guess what, I'm not coming back tomorrow. And within a week, I could go get another job, right? Who else in what other industry can an entire workforce just say that? And we can, right? If you know what you're doing, if you halfway know what you're doing, you can get up from your job and be like, I don't like this place, I'm going to go somewhere else. And the probability is that you're going to go somewhere else and get paid more. You know, I've had people that I've had to let go in my career that were under, you know, that were reporting to me. And, you know, for apparent reasons, they ended up sending back word to me that the place that they ended up getting a new job at, they got a raise at. You know, so you just can't lose. Even when you get fired, you can't lose. You just, it's nothing but a win after a win after a win. You know, and I mean, I can't say enough positive things about the industry in that regard.
Yeah, very well said. I think what I've heard a lot of people talk about, a lot of high school students and some people who are maybe in a non-technical industry right now, they're working and they're thinking about, hey, this is a good field, but I don't have a computer science degree. I hear that a lot. Some people say, I don't have a lot of background. Nobody in my family has done it. I'm not really cut out for this. I'm a more hands-on type of person. I like to do things with my hand. But they're looking at this. They're looking at software development. They would like to have an app done, or they might want to work on websites that they get excited about it. And there is this hesitation. Maybe because you don't have anybody to look up to. You don't have a role model. You don't have an uncle who's a software developer, right? But that's okay, because as soon as you start working on it, as you mentioned, barrier to entry is very low. You don't need a computer science degree at all. If you have a computer science degree, it does give you an edge in certain places, but there are enough jobs, enough companies that don't care about a degree at all. And you would be able to start there with just a little bit of training, just a little bit of help from an institution, maybe a course that you can do online or read a book. And if you can get the job done, go from a blank slate to a working application, then even if it's a trivial application, then you got your foot in the door. And as you mentioned, don't worry about your first job in terms of salary. As soon as you get your first job, no matter what kind of work it is, and you have proven that you can work and produce some results within 6 months or a year, after that, your opportunities will increase dramatically, right? Going from 0 years of experience to 1 year, all of a sudden, you could make a heck of a lot more money, and maybe you could apply to 4 or 5 times more companies because it'll be more acceptable to you. And from 1 year to 2 years is a big jump, 2 years to 4 years. And if you can survive in this industry and just hang on, even if you're having some difficulty, and keep doing the things that Gregorio is talking about, and also go to meetups and learn and keep that mind open about learning, then really sky is the limit. Because I have seen over and over, I have had superiors, I have people that I've worked under that were less qualified to me academically. It's happened over and over. And I am convinced that you certainly don't need it. A degree, I mean.
I agree.
All right. So now, if you could start over, what would you do differently? I'm sure you've learned some lessons. How would you go about being a new developer a little bit differently?
It goes back to I need to seek out help. I need to learn how to seek out help. I need to really build my network of professionals. These are the two critical things that I just did not know. I did not know how to ask for help. I didn't know where I could, because again, I was scared, right? It's what it comes down to. I was just scared and insecure. So this informs a lot of what we do at Savia, which is to, put you in a room and tell you it's okay to ask questions and be a resource, not ourselves, but even for our own fellows, to use our own fellows as resources. These are the things that would have, my first 5 years in software would have been so different had I done that, ask for help, seek out mentors, seek out, mentors is, we use it as a very generic term, someone at my career. So maybe it's someone to coach me, someone to kick me in the butt, right? And then build up your network, right? Build up a network of people that you can go to for different things, because, not any one person or any two or three people are going to be great at everything you might need. You need to take bits and pieces from different folks, kind of like what we do in software. We take little bits and pieces from here and then we put it together and we make something happen. Well, you got to do that with your career. So, in a manner of sense, you got to be able to engineer your career in that way. Doing that would have been, a completely different career for me. I would have excelled much, much faster. I would have been able to reach, higher goals and higher levels within companies, knowing how to really navigate corporate America and my technical colleagues and people next to them.
Do you think it's important for developers to do certain things, like think about certain actions that they can do to promote themselves? So now you are a developer, you have certain skills, and you have done a certain amount of work, but the world doesn't know about it. Perhaps the people that are very close to you, they know what you're doing. There is some value in that. Some people believe that marketing yourself or promoting yourself is not needed, maybe not desirable. And there are some other people who believe that it's a necessity for you to go out there and show what you can do so that you can move up, the corporate ladder, perhaps go and find other opportunities for yourself or just create a brand for yourself. You can do that through publishing your code in open frameworks, open platforms like GitHub. Or you could have a blog where you talk about things. You could do a podcast, or you could go to conferences and try to speak there. So I want to get your perspective on that.
I think it is really important, but let me bring this down to the foundation of the things that you said, because I do agree. I don't think it's a requirement. A lot of the things that you said right there are a requirement, and in some regards, like the GitHub thing, right? The GitHub thing is, that's a very polarizing conversation that we could potentially have around, how much should I be contributing to open source and how much time do I have to be putting up there and how much should you? It's a very, very, very big topic and polarizing topic, because I'll give you my opinion in 10 seconds. 100% of the time that I spend coding, I have never spent any time coding for me, for fun, for open source. I don't do that. That's not me. But for work and to move the company forward, that's where I have contributed all my time. And I do that. And I would do that day and night, weekends, like I don't care. Right. Even when I had the family, like that's what I need to do. That's how I've, that's just me. And so that kind of stuff, you really can't necessarily share with the world. So what do you have? That's a big catch 22 there. But going back to promoting yourself and going back to, the brand, it starts with having conversations with people on your team, right? Not being scared, engaging your team and engaging people outside your team. Because one of the things that I know that people who aren't necessarily, drawn to this world and drawn to this tech and code from an early age, if you're not that person and you're just a regular other type of person, I will use the word regular because the people that come through our program are a little bit more personable. They are comfortable talking with people, because more than likely they had another job where there wasn't about sitting in front of a computer. It was about having to interact with people. But now you get throw them into a world where they're not comfortable. And then they start eliciting a lot of the normal things that is in software development, where there's only one or two people in that team that are really awesome to talk to. Like, you got to be that one awesome person to talk to. You got to be that person that when there's a question, people come and ask you. Not because you immediately know the answer, but because you will get it back to them and because you're a pleasure to talk to. And we can understand the words coming out of your mouth. And you're not shy about it. You make eye contact, right? So those things, that's where that starts. Because if you do that in your team and you do that in your department, and you then, hey, in your company, you know that, hey, this is the woman to come and talk to about tech. Your brand itself, that's what your brand starts. And if you can do that there and get comfortable there, going to conferences, going to panels, going to other things like you're saying, and maybe you want to then gives you the confidence to spend some time on a blog to not talk about even, again, things outside of the inside of the open source community that might not necessarily be in your day to day 9 to 5. But maybe you can talk about the day to day 9 to 5 and what you do on a regular basis that would both promote you and your company's brand. Right. These are the things that where you start. And I wanted to start off by saying that that's the foundation of it, because sometimes it might be really intimidating for people to be like, oh, you got to go to conferences and speak in front of, you know, a room full of, you know, 30 to 50 to 100 to 200 people. That is also very intimidating to people. But that's not where you start, right? That would be a really hard place to start. You start by talking with your team and being communicative there, which is a good skill of a great software developer, right? Keeping your communication open. That's where you start, and you take it there because, yeah, you know what? One of the frustrating things for me in my career, now that I'm 16 years into it, like, I really don't think I should have to interview for a job anymore. Like, I know what I'm doing. Like, my product, like, it speaks for itself. Like, I'm awesome at what I do. I'm a little frustrated knowing that if I go back, because I didn't do a good job with my brand, right? I didn't really start doing anything with my brand or my name or or what we're talking about here until I started doing Sabio, which is now only at most 3 years. But I should have, right? I should have done that. And had I done that, I should be able to walk out of this building and just, oh, Gregorio wants to work here. Bam, bring him in. Let's do it, right? That's what I should be at. And I'm not, right? And I'm not, but I should be there. And that's the frustrating thing.
Yeah, I think that building a brand is a difficult thing to achieve, but something to look forward to, especially as you grow your career. People should recognize you for what you do. Somebody mentions Gregorio Rojas to me, I should know exactly what he's about, right? If I know that, then yes, the interview process becomes a formality.
Yes.
All right.
Fantastic.
Let's get back to your story. Let's see if we can get some fine points out of that story that we started the interview with. You started your career at $27,000 a year, and 18 months later, you were a senior developer, and that sounds pretty dramatic because you had, you know, you quadrupled pretty much your salary, or at least tripled. So how did you do that? And I have a feeling that it didn't involve just, you know, working, doing your job and just going 9 to 5. You had to do something different.
Well, you know, and this is where, having the network worked out, and it was luck, man. Some of this, I mean, I have to attribute to luck let me first preface that I believe that luck in many regards is where hard work meets opportunity. And I had put in a whole lot of hard work. And what happened at that company that I was telling you that was going to IPO, but then the bubble burst and that company ended up going away. When I got to that job, I ended up sitting next to a guy named Anthony. And I impressed upon him that I was a guy he wanted on his team. So when our company went away, he went back to the other company that he just came from. They were more than happy to take Anthony back because that man knew what he was doing. And that guy was on point. So Anthony was like, look, we know we need more developers. Gregorio, why don't you come with me? And so it was through my network, through the fact that, again, my brand in that room, right? We were in an office with one other developer, but because I wasn't just not face down in my code, I was communicating with him and talking to him and asking him, I was able to ask him because he was a cool guy, right? He was in our little room. So that was like our little safe space, at least for me. Because I remember thinking, oh, the guys out there are a little different. I'm really glad I'm inside here with Anthony. So in that safe space, you know, Anthony, like, hey, come with me. And I went and sat for an interview with his director. And the job happened to pay $82,000. And that was it. So the guy liked me. He said, look, Anthony says you're awesome. So here's the job. Just let me know if you want it. And I was like, oh, well, I was making $60,000 at the time. I was like, okay, yeah, that was like not a big deal for me. That was, you know, I was like, all right, are you like, well, you're not going to talk about like the cost? And he's like, well, look, I don't negotiate. I'm going to give you my best offer. It's $82,000. And, you know, that's, if you'd like it, take it. If not, I'm sorry, but that's it. So for me, sitting there listening to this man saying he's going to give me a $22,000 raise and that's it, I was like, okay, yeah, sure. you know, as I twist my arm, okay, fine, you know, I give in. And that's how that happened, right? Because, but then again, we talk about the opportunity, the networking, putting yourself in a room and making yourself known that you will make things happen. I mean, that was very important. Had I been sitting in a different place in that building, had I not talked to this dude and had I not talked to him and communicated to him my expertise of what I was willing to do and what I could learn, because I came to this guy with questions, but it was new questions every time. Right. It was a new thing that I had gone further on. And if you could get yourself in a room and make your network known that like, yeah, your skill set is good, like it, good things happen. But then I hit a wall after that because I didn't know where to go from there. I was not in a room, and now in my new company, I was not in a place where there was people kind of pushing me because everyone was just kind of like, they were just content because it was a good scenario, but I didn't know really to keep pushing because I was just so ecstatic as to where I was. I didn't know that I should have kept pushing. I didn't know that I could. I didn't know how to. But, you know, that's what I've learned over the time.
The key here is that you are open to opportunities outside of the company. Because if you're within the company, no matter where you start, to move up the corporate ladder is possible and happens for a lot of people. And it can be quite rewarding because then you can move in different directions. It's possible, especially if you're in a large organization. But a lot of times you get the biggest bump in your salary when you switch jobs. That's just a fact.
Yeah. And you know, let's make sure it's a well-rounded part because that salary is a big part of it too. But sometimes it's about an opportunity to maybe you move laterally with regards to salary, but maybe it's more responsibility and maybe it's the same salary. Maybe it's the same type of responsibility, but maybe it's a different stack. It's a different technology. It's a different industry where, you know, wow, if you can put together e-commerce skills with a heavy marketing based application and then go back and move into now, you know, social networks. I remember, you know, you could, if those are opportunities that allow you to just add more, make you just in general, a more valuable employee because you just know so much, right? And we were talking about business people, right? People in business, people who have a breadth of knowledge and are really great to talk about, not just one very specific industry. That's nice, but someone who can really talk to and work and function and excel in a variety of industries and a variety of different things in the business world, that person is awesome. And that is kind of like how a great software developer could try to look at the career as well.
Excellent point. Now we're coming towards the end of the interview. Before we go, I want to ask you about your perspective on how to onboard people when they're coming in. What's your advice for software shops that are looking to hire new and aspiring developers?
You know, if you're looking to hire new and aspiring developers, you really need to be open to a wide candidate pool. I happen to believe that, you know, you have to hire for strengths, hire for potential, be willing to spend some time training, onboarding them, training them on your particular stack. And don't be afraid. Here's the other thing. As open as I am about like, hey, take people, give people a shot. And well, one, because you need to, because there's not enough of us out here to keep your company going. So it's just a matter of necessity. Like, you know, get your head out of the sand, people. Like, if you don't hire people the way you need to be, then someone else will. But the point is, you're not, and your company's going to die. So get check in with reality. That's what you need to do. But then, look, the person you hire, I'm a big fan of the contract to hire stuff that's going on right now. A lot of the contract to hire. Yeah, I'm all for it. Try people out. You have to try people out, but don't, you're not married to them. So if you feel like you're taking a risk on someone, yeah, maybe it is a risk, but the risks are going to pay off. And if they don't, just get rid of those people. That's fine. That's just my caveat to that. Like, look, you don't have to marry them. Just try them out and make sure that you're providing training. Now, once they sit down, you have to, you know, really make sure that it is an environment that they feel comfortable asking questions. If you don't provide that environment, then what you're going to end up having is someone who is, you know, scared to ask questions, not communicating, and really not operating at their best. And you want them to operate at their best so that you can see their best. But you too have to do your best, right? Because if you don't, then you're really setting up both parties for failure. So you have to provide that environment to make them feel welcome. And I think just throw them right into the code. You don't even have to, right? It's not like you're going to give them the button to deploy to production. Hey, you hired them to code, get them coding, you know, check in with them, give them at least one person that will go and proactively check in with them. Don't make them come out of the hole, right? Go into their comfort area, right? Hey, what's going on? Pull up a chair and have them sit down with someone. Force them to, like, yeah, this is what's going on. So then that way, you know, really where their head's at and how they are, you know, absorbing your materials, your environment, your workflows. And so that they feel like they're not alone, that they have that support.
Yeah, I like that. I think this is great advice. Now let's look at the other side of the equation. If you are a new developer in the audience and you're thinking about maybe getting your first job or doing well in your current job, what's your advice for them?
My advice for them, you know, in general, the big thing I tell people a lot is to communicate well, right? Make sure communication is really paramount. And sometimes that communication has to take the form of emails, right? Because you want to make sure that all the communication that's going on, you have some place to come back to reference if you need to. So you communicate. And then make sure that you're, even though don't get into the habit of coding for the sake of code. I have this conversation often. Look, I know you want to build and you want to deliver the best, but right now my best advice is deliver, right? Go tell your manager, hey, look, this thing that you asked me to do, I fixed, it's done. I put a shelf set up or I created a branch and I pushed it. So you want to look at it, go ahead and look at it. But now, hold on a second. I want to take some time and I want to refactor that. And I want to go and see if I can squeeze some more, you know, more performance out of it. There was something in there that's not perfect. I want to see if I can get it to work better. That way you're delivering your product. You have like a little win, right? Focus on small wins. We talk about focusing on small wins and celebrating those small wins every single time you have. So here's my small win. I got it done. I know it's not awesome, but I want you to know I got it done. And now I'm going to go and try and make it better. Right. And maybe you have some input for me. I'm willing to take some input on what that better might be. But I'm going to go back now and I'm going to keep coding and try to make that better. And from my perspective as a manager, now I know a lot. I know that you're working. I know you're producing. I know you're focused on delivery, which is what we're focused on, too. And the other things we can help you with. Right. The other things as a junior developer, you know what? You might need to actually talk to me about how to squeeze more performance out of that. And what is the most optimized way to take that data from point A to point B, right? That's what I'm here for as a senior developer. That's what my job is. So you've done your job. Now let me go do mine, right? There's a communication there. And what that does for the junior developer, again, small wins, boom, you bank those small wins. It increases your brand and your stock, but then it gives you room to breathe to do these things that might haunt you. Is there a better way to do that? Is there something that I need to make myself aware of that I don't know? Let me go study that some more, right? Let me spend more time researching that. And then that's a win for you as a junior developer.
Wow, that's really, really good advice. And anybody who is a new developer or junior developer, I would recommend just go back and listen to it again. It's really good advice. And I second all of that. Now, I want to talk to before we leave, I want to talk to you about your institute. You run a code school called Sabio in California, and you told me that you a little bit about it, and I was curious about, you know, why you started it and why you are using .NET as your platform.
So we started it, my wife and I, we started it simply because we recognized the need for more technical talent. It was such a pain for me to have to hire, and everyone that I know that has to hire, good gracious, like, what an ordeal. But yet there's so many people out there that are looking for great opportunities and great work. So let's just put those two together. And we started doing .NET because I just happened to come from a Microsoft stack background. I mean, way back in the day, BostonApartments.com was built in VBScript, in, you know, classic ASP. And it actually had an access database that I stored the data in. That's where I started. And in my career, I got kind of typecast in .NET. So, hey, if I'm going to teach people how to become software developers, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to teach .NET because that's what I did. I did consider Ruby for a time there because, hey, it's so popular. But then I realized, well, why? Because it's so easy. And I'm like, well, me, I can teach people .NET, so let's go do that. And so we set out to create an environment that was welcoming of everybody because we need everybody involved in this, right? This is, as they say, a couple of people have been talking about this. This is not a game where your best players need to play. This is a game where everybody needs to be participating in. And so we set out to create a very welcoming environment and invite anybody in. So unlike a lot of other coding boot camps, we do not require you to have any kind of experience. We do not require you to pass some rigorous entrance exam. You show up at a door, you want to learn to code, we put you in front of an instructor and we go. And so from day zero to when you get a job, it is essentially, we've got it down to 7 months. The most of the people that come through our program from day zero to when they get a job in the Los Angeles area is 7 months. We'll take you from wherever you're at. We don't care, because we have the skill sets and we have the training program to take anybody from any industry, whatever you were doing, or maybe you weren't doing anything. We've trained people from 19 to 60. People with, again, 19-year-old doesn't have any career, has very little work history, to someone who's 60 who, you know, has a significant career or multiple careers in those 60 years. And we get them employed at a success rate of 95%. And we're here in Southern California in Los Angeles, but we just opened up a new office in Newport Beach, which is Orange County. If you needed some orientation, that's like right next to Irvine. And we're opening up one in the Valley, the Los Angeles, in the city of Pacoima. I'm not talking about Silicon Valley. I'm talking about the Valley in LA. And so we really have this SoCal area now. We have really good distribution here, and we're just seeing tremendous success, and we're growing. You know, we're growing, but we grow under very specific circumstances, right? In that our quality has to remain. And so we started out our first cohort 100% placement, and so from there we've been able to maintain. You know, we've always been above 90, and our last numbers, which include people who graduated, I think at the beginning of March. I think it's still inclusive of that. So even, again, 95% out of the program, out of the intense training program, it's a median time to job is 6 weeks. So we get some people that are employed even before they graduate, and we have some people, you know, on the other side of 6 weeks. But the median time is 6 weeks. And these are people who go for work in small little companies, right? In small little companies and very large corporations. Doing anything from entertainment to fintech, healthcare, some type of online gaming. I mean, it could be anything, right? Because in LA, obviously, we have Hollywood and we have a lot of entertainment and a lot of startups in that world and corporations in that world. But then we have just a lot of healthcare and a lot of enterprise software here, right? Enterprise isn't that sexy, so you don't hear about it as often as you talk about, and we hear about companies coming out of Silicon Valley, but they employ, right? And they pay really well in the industry, just as well as most other companies. So it's, again, it's a win-win.
Excellent. So anybody who's in the Southern California area and wants to become a developer, they can get in touch with you. So how can they get in touch with you? How can they learn more about your stuff?
So you can come to our site at sabio.la. So that would be http://sabio, S-A-B-I-O.la. You could also follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is WeSabio, WeSabio. And I should actually know as well, because I mean, we have people coming from outside of LA to come to us, but we're also one of the only, I think there's two or three of us in the country that you can take our course using your GI Bill benefits, because you can actually take our course for college credit through our Antioch University partnership. And so that opens up opportunities and avenues for people who are still looking to get their degree or get a second degree and come and take our courses. But the big thing for us is really the GI benefits, because now veterans, you know, unemployment in the veteran community is just too high, right? These are people who have tremendous amount of skill sets and they just don't have a place to employ them. And if you come through our Antioch program, you can apply all your GI benefits towards the training. It's the same exact training. And then if you're a regular student, you could also leverage financial aid, student federal financial aid through our university program as well.
Oh, that's excellent. And we'll have all of these links and everything that we talked about on the website. Go to the page for this episode and you'll see show notes. Thank you so much, Gregorio. And I hope that we can catch up with you later.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I enjoy, look forward to listening to your other podcasts in the future.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.